Napa know-how.
A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Hey, Almighty Ballin' listeners, thanks for tuning in today for a fireside chat with me and Red Nation Hoops podcast host Salman Ali. And Red Nation Hoops is, of course, the ABPN A-Team podcast that is representing the Houston Rockets. So it's always great to talk to him about his team because it's a team we're talking about right now. I think he undersells himself in terms of his insight into the Houston Rockets. So, Salman, just go ahead, introduce yourself, talk a little bit about Red Nation Hoops. Of course, plug that Twitter handle, and then we can get the show on the road.
Yeah, so basically, as you said, I'm the host of the Red Nation Hoops podcast, part of the Almighty Ballin podcast network. I'm also the managing editor of RedNationHoops.com, a site that covers Houston Rockets. And yeah, I have absolutely no idea what the hell I'm talking about, but people pay attention, so that's good. That's basically where you can find me, at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter is my Twitter handle.
Oh man, you know what? I'm going to, can you send me your audio intro file, like your music, so I can play it so that the listeners can know how dope it is?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just send it to me and I'll play it as my intro music, so you, the listener, right now, that intro music that you just listened to, that's different from what it normally is, that music is the intro to Red Nation Hoop. So that's the level of production that we're talking about. Salman is a real pro. So on the 20th, the Houston Rockets lost a game. I think it was 102-100, right?
Yeah, I think they lost by 2 points, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, the score was somewhere around there. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Spurs were trailing by 13 with 4 minutes and 30 seconds to go, and ended up coming back from that, which ESPN Stats and Info tweeted that was a 1 in 1,388 chance, so 0.001% chance. So that's that's too bad. It reminds me, honestly, a little bit of the Warriors in the finals.
3-1. I mean, that's exactly what happened. I mean, if you think about it, this kind of stuff happens all the time in the NBA. It's the NBA. It's sports. You know, nothing's predictable. And the Rockets, I mean, who knew they were going to shoot 6-for-38 from beyond the 3-point line? That stuff just... You knew it? I mean, they were down for a cold night at some point. And unfortunately, it happened against the Spurs. And the Spurs were able to capitalize on it by hitting some really key late shots. Patty Mills hit some great shots late, and the Rockets turned the ball over and kind of, they threw the game away. And I'm not really that disappointed in the Rockets because this is really their first really bad loss of the season. In case you're counting that Lakers game at the beginning of this
season. Well, it wasn't really a bad loss. I mean, the reason why I compared it to the Warriors in the finals is because there were some critical errors down the stretch.
Sure.
Yeah. But it also wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been some real significant flukes of fate, you know? So it's hard to calculate and say, okay, this was the degree to which it was a fluke, and this was the degree to which it was human error. But it was somewhere in that gray space. So, you know, it's hard for me to, like, pin it on James Harden and say, or, you know, the Rockets team or Mike D'Antoni. It's hard for me to say, like, you guys suck. You're not clutch. You know, some real, like, hot Stephen A. Smith takes. That's not how I saw that loss.
And that label really wouldn't fit considering the game they won the night before where they were down by 13 with 2 minutes down by 10 with 2 minutes to go against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they caught up and won that game in overtime. So I mean, the whole they're not clutch and all that, like, that wouldn't fit. And I don't, again, like, this is just one of those nights that happens. Like, I don't, I it's not if you're a Rockets fan listening to this, like, you really shouldn't be disappointed. I mean, it was obviously a bad loss, and they made some critical errors down late. But, I mean, I think Mike D'Antoni's a good coach, and I think he'll address that stuff, you know, during the film session, and they'll be fine. I mean, they've responded to losses really well this season. They haven't lost two games in a row yet. And usually after a bad win, they come back and, you know, blow out teams. And that's what's different about this team than last year's team. This team is really good, and they blow out teams that they're supposed to beat. And every team that they've lost to this season, this is a stat that I looked up just recently. Every team that they lost to this season is in the playoffs right now. And the only team that isn't is the Lakers. So, I mean, that's pretty damn impressive.
But the Lakers beat the Warriors, so I mean, I think they're in a tier of their own.
Sure, yeah, and that was when the and that was when the Lakers were hot at the beginning of the season, because that was the first game of the season, and so that was when they really had their swagger. So I can't really blame them for that loss. But yeah, I mean, every team they've lost to has been is a legitimate playoff contender. So I can't really, you know, be mad at them losing to the Spurs by 2 points. Points on a bad shooting night. If you put it like that, it sounds a lot less worse than it actually was.
Yeah. So, you know, with a 3-point shooting team like the Rockets, the fact that you can go out and blow out teams on a semi-regular basis, that says something really important about the team, which is, if you think about, you know, the accuracy of any given night, a single data point, right, as like a dart throw, right, it puts them inside a closer circle of, or a higher circle of potential outcomes, you know, where it's like, if you average 20 points more than the average team, you can have a bad night shooting, but still beat them. And that's what was so amazing about the Warriors last season. You know, every once in a while, they would go out and shoot some horrific percentage from the 3-point line. And such is the nature of 3-point shooting. Like there's such a high degree of statistical variance that just is sort of an inevitability. But when you're averaging so many more points than the competitor does, you can land a little bit further across the map, do a little bit worse, and still either get the win or, I mean, they lost by 2 points despite, like you mentioned, they shot 6 for 38, which is 38. Like 12 or 13%. Yeah. So, yeah, I really thought that actually was a bit of a statement game. Honestly, I think it's incredibly impressive to me that they could shoot that poorly and still, you know, only lose by 2 points to the Spurs. I mean, let's face it. So the reason that's so impressive to me is because typically they average, do you know what their 3-point shooting average is team-wide?
They are shooting the three ball at 37.5%. So that's pretty damn good. The average 3-point shooter is somewhere around 34 to 35%. So they're shooting higher as a team than the average 3-point shooter, but like 3%, which is pretty damn insane. That's sixth in the league in 3-point shooting, and last year they were like 15th or something like that. And the thing that's important about that is they are a high volume 3-point shooting team. So when you're shooting the three ball at a middling rate like they were the past couple of years, that really affects how good your offense can be. So by adding in guys like Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, and still maintaining that high volume of 3-point shooting, I mean, this team is really lethal offensively. You know, I mean, it's no surprise they're fourth in offensive rating right now in a year where offense is really historic. Like, the Warriors and Raptors are really damn good offensively. Like, they're having two of the greatest offensive seasons of all time, and the Rockets are fourth in the league in a season where that's happening. So, I mean, yeah. And that's really impressive to me. And you said it right. Like, if to lose a game like that in which you shot 6 for 38, I mean, that's it is a bit of a statement game.
Let me jump in for a second just to, you know, put that number in perspective. So they shot 38 times, which, you know, if they had made their average 37%, that would have been 14 three-pointers made instead of six. So that would have been 8 more three-pointers, and 8 times 3 is 24. So that, you know, I don't think that the quality of three-point shots that they were taking were quite as good as, you know, the average game. I think the Spurs did a really good job and always do a really good job of closing out on the perimeter. So, I mean, maybe you can realistically say that they should have thought like they should have shot like 33% and made 13 of their threes instead of six. They still would win by 20 points.
Yeah, and you said it right. The Spurs are one of the best teams in the NBA at taking away three-pointers. And that's a real key stat in today's NBA because the best indication of a good three-point defense is not necessarily the percentage you're allowing. It's the amount of attempts you're allowing. And that's a key stat that, you know, Kevin Pelton and Tom Haberstroh bring up all the time. And the Spurs are one of the best at it. And the Rockets still managed to get up a good amount of attempts, 38 attempts on a team that doesn't allow that many attempts. Like, they usually force you to take that long two ball because they're really smart in the amount, in the types of shots that they allow. And ironically, they take a lot of mid-range jumpers, but that's not the case here. I mean, on defense, they're really smart, and the Rockets still managed to get up 38 attempts. And I think if you look up how many open shots they had last night, you'd be surprised because the Rockets missed a lot of open threes. And for guys like Eric Gordon, those guys are going to get their contested jumpers. They just like, they're just comfortable shooting in any environment because they're just like one of the best shooters in the NBA. But for everybody else, they shoot a high volume of open three pointers. So I think if they shot around 34% last night, not only would they have won that game, they might have won by like 10. And that's pretty
well. They would have won by 20. Well, yeah. And you know that's actually not quite true because their offensive rebounding was so good last night.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But they would have won.
Yeah, they would have won. And you're right. Games aren't played in a vacuum like that. But yeah, they would have won by a decent margin, I would still say, if they shot the three ball a little bit higher. Yeah, and it's just one of those games. Like, I really don't think there's too much to take away from that game, other than they shot the three ball poorly and they made some key mistakes late. And that I don't want to take away from that because they did. Trevor Ariza made a key turnover. James Harden turned the ball over a lot in the fourth quarter. And they took some poor shots. Eric Gordon shot a quick trigger three off an offensive rebound.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and
my first thought with that shot though was that if that had gone in, we wouldn't have criticized it, you know.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, there was another shot. Like Trevor Ariza took a driving layup against and got the charge call, and he really shouldn't be taking those shots. He really shouldn't dribble the ball at all, that's pretty much that's just a sign of poor execution down the stretch. And they haven't, and I think if you guys know who Paul is, at Rocket Intellect on Twitter, he made a really good point.
Dude, everyone knows who that is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, it's Rocket Intellect. He's a celebrity. He's hot.
Of course. Everybody knows who he is, but like...
Twitter celeb.
He pointed out that the Rockets made mistakes that they normally don't make, and that's why I want to say, like, this was an anomaly in every sense of the word. Last night, and I don't want to sound like that Rockets homer, but I mean, if you've been watching them all season, you'd understand like that game was so unusual and peculiar in different ways, like in the way they shot the three ball, in the way they executed down the stretch, because they've executed well down the stretch in every other game, and this was just a weird game, and I don't really have too much to say to that other than it was like a bad loss.
Yeah, sure. And sort of getting into, you know, some of the more broad points that you can make about the Rockets team. Some of that was put on display. So last year you mentioned that they shot like 33-34% from three over the course of the season. And what that meant is there were a lot of long rebounds because when you shoot a three, the chances of that hitting rim and then bouncing far is a lot higher. So what that means is that, you know, you rebound the ball. First, there's a higher chance of a wing or a ball handler rebounding the ball and then pushing the break, which is hard in transition. That's hard to deal with. So last year, their transition defense was, I think, 29th in the league. But if it wasn't 29th, it was somewhere near that. And you saw what kind of sucks so much about when you aren't hitting your threes defensively, because so many of the Spurs points were, there was that there was that one shot in the fourth quarter that was Pau Gasol got into the open court and made an uncontested layup. David Lee did that. And like, that shouldn't be happening. And it only happens when you're going, what, like 6 for 38 from three. So, you know, yeah, I, there are even defensive implications to shooting a lot of threes and not making them. Because, you know, if you do make them, on the other hand, then, you know, you have to take the ball to the baseline, you know, pass it in, give it to the point guard, and your defense has time to, reset. So, you know, they did a pretty good job of getting back defensively. I certainly don't think that the Spurs blew them up by any means. But, their team defensive structure last night was really impressive to me. And in the half court, I think that they forced the Spurs into a lot of difficult shots. You know, they just, you know, were sort of screwed over, like we've been saying, by fate, because they kept missing those shots, which led to fast break opportunities, which led to Kawhi Leonard free throws, which, you know, led to David Lee open layups and BS like that.
If I can cut you off for a second, they were so bad in transition last year. Like, as you said, on transition defense. And a lot of that was, yes, because they shot the three ball poor. But a lot of it was because they just didn't give a damn. And that's me being really, really blunt about it. Like, they really did not run back on defense last year. And in last night's game, there was a play in which Trevor Ariza, like, he made a huge hustle play. He ran back in transition. I mean, he got the fast break layup, and then he stole the ball from Kawhi Leonard from behind. I'm not sure if you remember that play. And that's just stuff that Trevor Ariza
did. Yeah, Trevor Ariza got, like, 5 steals, I think, last night. Maybe 4.
And that's just stuff he didn't do last year. He didn't care. Like, that's just that extended to the whole team. Like, this whole team didn't care at all to play transition defense last year. Nobody ran back. Nobody made hustle plays. The 50-50 balls are really 75-25 balls in the other team's favor because they just didn't even bother going after them, right? And I think that's really key. Like, you know, in the NBA, like, effort matters a lot. And I this team actually cares on defense this year, and that's why they've been so good this year in defense. They're 14th in the league in defense, allowing 104.2 points per 100 possessions, which is really good. And they're doing all the structural things right. You know, they're having a pretty good job protecting the rim. They're closing out on 3-point shots, and they're forcing teams into those mid-range jumpers. And so I think they have a pretty good strategy, and I think this year they're finally executing it because they care. And that sounds really simplified, like, but it's true. I mean, they just didn't care last year, and that really mattered in the broad spectrum of everything.
Yeah, no, I agree on pretty much all of those points. I mean, it was palpable, the miscommunication, distrust, and everything that was present in the Rockets locker room last year. It was really troubling, but I mean, they clearly fixed that, you know, not only by replacing a certain, God, I rip on Dwight Howard too much, but I just,
yeah, you really do. He's a good player, but I mean,
no, I like, I have nothing against him as a player. I still think he's a great player. I just hate him. Like, the guy, like, he's just like a big infant.
I mean, I have nothing against Dwight, honestly. Like, I feel like he's been mischaracterized a lot by the national media. I really do think that. I think he has a good heart. Like, everything he does, he's not trying to mess up locker rooms, right? Like, he doesn't want to get into fights with his coaches. He doesn't want to hate his teammates. It just ends up happening that way. And I really hope it doesn't impact the way we talk about his Hall of Fame career in, like, 20, 30 years, because he's had a Hall of Fame career. He's one of the best defensive centers of our generation. And, you know, last year he just didn't play like that. Like, and that extends to the whole team. The whole team had, like, low season careers, right? And I think Dwight was you need to make Dwight happy in a situation for him to win. And I think Atlanta has a pretty good chance to do that with him. We'll see. I'm rooting for Dwight. I'm rooting for Dwight because I feel like he gets he has too many bad voices in his ear, in his head all the time. Like he really shouldn't be posting up. That's something that Rockets fans have been, if you read the forums, if you read Rockets Twitter, I mean, everybody hates that about Dwight. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, he's just – he's a good guy. Like, he's done a lot for Houston as the city. And I don't know. I really don't think you should hate him, man. Give him some slack. Give him some slack.
Okay. Look, I don't want to turn this into a Dwight Howard podcast. I have a tendency to do that. My last Atlanta podcast was half just me talking about how much I don't like Dwight. But I would make the argument that the three best defensive centers of all time go in this order: Hakeem first, Tim Duncan second, and then Dwight in a vacuum, you know, to borrow your verbiage. I think Dwight Howard, during his prime, those 3 years that he won DPOY, is the third best defensive center of all time during that stretch. So I certainly don't have an issue with him as a player. I don't like him. But anyways, getting back to the Rockets, I was really high on this team going into the season. And, you know, you talked to Ben DuBose of Locked On Rockets. And, you know, one of the better Locked On podcasts, by the way, Ben DuBose. Make sure you follow him and check out Locked On Rockets.
He's excellent. He's excellent. You got to listen to him.
Yeah, good guy and good podcaster. So, yeah, I was listening to your appearance as prep for this podcast, and sort of, you know, listening to you being like, I really am sort of shocked that this team looks like it's on pace to get 50 plus wins, 60 wins. So that's not how I felt at all. I'm interested to hear your reasoning for why you weren't as high on the Rockets as, you know, someone who isn't from Houston.
My reasoning behind this is, like, I thought they'd be a 50-win team. Like, I thought they'd be, like, that was my prediction. I thought they'd be 50-32. I didn't think they'd be 60-22. That's what they're on pace to get, and that's still insane to me, because I didn't think they'd be this good defensively. Like, I thought they'd be 15th-20th in defensive rating. I didn't think they'd be a top half defense, and that's what they are right now. And, that's basically my reason. I just didn't think they'd be as good defensively as they've shown. And this past month, they've been so good defensively, and they've shown another level, which I haven't seen from them. And this whole, like, we were talking about it earlier, this whole blowing out teams thing, like, that's real. Like, good teams blow out, like, the best teams blow out, you know, bad teams. That's something that happens in the NBA all the time. The Clippers blow out bad teams. The Warriors blow out bad teams.
The Warriors blow out the Clippers.
Yeah, and same thing with the Cavs, and when you're talking about it on that macro level, that's championship level contender, right? Like when you have the fifth highest point differential in the NBA, which is what the Rockets have right now, I mean, that's when you start talking about dark horse Western Conference Finals. That's when you start to have those discussions. And I didn't think they'd be this good. Like, I thought they'd be a second round out, and that's me being genuine, because I just didn't. Like, I knew their offense would be amazing under D'Antoni, and I knew adding shooters like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, it would fit beautifully, because that's just what James Harden needed for so many years, and getting those guys really helped. But I didn't think they'd have the personnel to put up the defense they have, and they're surprising me in that aspect. They actually have a better defense than the Cavs right now, which, of course, I talk about this with Forrest Walker all the time. I don't think the Cavs are going to be this bad defensively in the playoffs. They have another gear.
Think?
No, yeah, I mean, they have another gear, and we've seen that, and And that's kind of the question I want to ask you. Like, do you think they can get to another gear in the playoffs? Because I don't think so at this point. I think they're maximizing what they're doing. And so if they're playing like this in the playoffs, like, how far can they go?
I think that they're not maximizing their possibilities. I think that what they've been finishing games with, and I'm sure that you can attest to this because you've been watching, they have been finishing games with a lineup of Patrick Beverley, Eric Gordon, James Harden, Trevor Ariza at the four, and then Clint Capella, who now is out with a tibula fracture, and he'll be out for 6 weeks. But that was their closing lineups. It was either Capella or Nene.
Yeah, and a lot of the times, this frustrated Rockets fans, it was Nene. And Nene is the inferior player of the two. And Mike D'Antoni, for some reason, he has this bizarre trust in him. But yeah, that's been pretty much...
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, Capella's 23 years old. He's got He's got some growth to do.
Sure, but he's better than Nene. I mean, can we at least admit
Nene's that? Nene's not bad. I mean, he's just not good.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, Clint Capela.
That Nene is better than Capela. That's, I guess, my point.
Sure. I mean, he's a better passer. I mean, I don't think you can argue any.
Better hair.
Huh? Better hair. And that's crucial.
Better there. Name.
I'm not sure about that. Capela, like. That's a damn good name. Like, you walk into the club with a name like Clint Capela, they're getting you VIP seats in the back, and that's no question. I'm not sure if you can do that with Nene. But
Capella's a lot more handsome. He's got this like boyish charm, you know.
Yeah, I like the hair on Capela too. I think you're underselling that. He's a better lob catcher. He's a better. I think he's a lot like that. Athleticism helps rim protection wise a lot. He has quicker feet and he can switch on to guards, which Nene can't do at all. Like, Nene can't switch for crap anymore. But like, Capela can. And that's something we saw in the conference finals 2 years ago against Steph Curry. Like, Capela guarded Steph really good on those switches. And I don't think Nene can do that. And I think if you're trying to maximize the potential of this team, I think Capela has to be in the closing lineup. I think Nene's fine. Like, he's fine as a backup. But if you're closing games with Nene, you have a serious problem. And that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah, I don't want to make the Nene versus Capela argument my Waterloo. AKA, I mean, it's a losing fight. Clint Capela is better. I was just making the point that, you know, I think being totally dismissive of Nene is probably not fair to a guy who, has had a long and successful career, and there's, you know, certain benefits that come along with that. But, I mean, it doesn't really matter now. I mean, Nene is their option, you know, at least for the time being. But the reason we got into that whole, you know, discourse right there is because I was saying during the playoffs, this team is going to look a lot different because that's what Mike D'Antoni does. He cuts the rotation down. And I'll tell you right now, right? The guard rotation is going to switch between Patrick Beverley, Eric Gordon, and Harden at the three. And Harden defensively is a better three. And also, the best defensive wings in the league play the three position. And if he's playing the three, then he is, you know, like taking that defensive player out of the game instead of taking some shooting guard out of the game. And that just makes his passing even more deadly. So I think James Harden is a better small forward than he is a shooting guard defensively and arguably offensively, but you know, we'll see. And then, you know, you have Trevor Ariza, who is an awesome power forward. You know what Trevor Ariza is like? He's like Paul Millsap, right? I mean, Millsap with the quick hands. He's 6'8". You know, he's sort of bulky. He's got some hops. He's not as good as Paul Millsap. Yeah. I'm saying he plays the same role defensively.
Sure. And I think Paul Millsap can switch a little bit better than Trevor Ariza. But yeah, you're right. You're right. He has similar qualities defensively and as Paul Millsap. And the only difference is being like weight, right? And if Trevor Ariza had like 20 more pounds on him,
right?
Then you can make a perfect comparison. And I think playing Trevor Ariza at the four is something Rockets fans wanted to see forever under McHale, and they just didn't get that. And now we can see how good he can be because, I mean, he can shoot the three ball. We all know that on offense. And on defense, when you put him against fours, I mean, you can do a lot of like sneaky smart stuff defensively that you can't do with a traditional four. Like, you can't do that with Ryan Anderson at the four, right? And
right.
And that's what was really key in unlocking this small lineup, right? Trevor Ariza at the four, and also like having a team where four players are on the court can shoot the basketball. I mean, that's pretty insane, right? And that's something the Rockets haven't had.
Absolutely, and that's sort of where I'm going with this. So you're limiting your point guard rotation to these three guys, Patrick Beverley, Eric Gordon, and James Harden, but really 36 minutes, unless you're in the finals, and then probably like 40 minutes, 36 minutes a game are going to be James Harden, Eric Gordon, Patrick Beverley, Trevor Ariza, and Clint Capela. That is a killer lineup. that is a death lineup. And it is in a real way. And what I think really makes the death lineup, and this is something that Daryl Morey has talked about and something that I think is a little bit underappreciated about the Rockets. What really makes the death lineup is that you have these three-point shooters who aren't just three-point shooters, they're four-point shooters. They shoot from like 5-6 feet behind the arc, and you have to cover them. You have to close out so far that, I mean, a guy like Kawhi Leonard, right? If he's closing out on a three-point shooter who's right up on the line, he can get back into the defensive position fairly easily. That's different if Ryan Anderson is shooting from 30-something feet away. That was what was so ridiculous about Steph Curry, is he broke the game and sort of made it unfair. If you run a high pick and roll and it's 30 feet high, you know, basically, you are taking the big man out of the possession, and Draymond Green was basically running a half court 4-versus-3 drill. So it was like, you know, it was like, what is it? A fish in a barrel? Is that what it is?
I wouldn't know.
Well, anyway, so do you get what I'm saying? I mean, Eric Gordon can shoot from deep, from like really deep. So can Ryan Anderson, which is what Daryl Morey said about like, okay, I gave this guy so much money because specifically people don't understand the value of three-point shooting, especially this particular type of three-point shooting. Do you remember that quote?
Yeah. And and he was right in some extent. I mean, like, if you have a guy that can shoot from 3 feet behind the three-point line, that stretches the floor so much. Like, defenders have to worry about Ryan Anderson all the time. And that gives Harden so much more room to operate. And that's really the key in having shooters around Harden, right? Creating space. And when you have that much space for Harden to get in the paint, where you're forcing defenders to make really hard decisions, right? Like, do I cheat over here and guard Harden with these two guys, or do I stay home on these shooters, or do I try to do a little bit of both? But I mean, then you have Capella to worry about, right, as a role man. And that's what really makes this offense so great, is they forced you to make these really tough decisions that, I mean, you really can't blame defenders when they mess up, right? Because they're thinking so much, and that's really the sign of a good offense. When you force the defense to think, you have them right in your hands, right? And so, yeah, I think, and also a key factor in all this is like is Sam Dekker. Like, if you put Sam Dekker at the four, like, Sam Dekker's been so damn good in that power forward position, and this is something we talked about when you came on my podcast like a month ago, right? When you put Sam Dekker at the four, he's a game changer offensively and defensively, because he's been a lot better defensively than I thought he could be as a rookie, especially. And like, he can run the floor in transition, he can finish at the rim, and he's like a really good three-point shooter. He's like he's shooting the three ball at a 40% clip, which is just really insane. Like, I didn't think he could shoot the ball that well. And in transition, like, that team is really deadly when you put Sam Dekker at the four. And you can interchange that with Ryan Anderson, too. And that's what's cool about this team, right? They have flexibility to do different things, right? There's not one lineup that you have to stick with. You can change it up depending on matchup. And so it's interesting.
Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows more isn't always better, unless we're talking about full-size vans. These beasts do more than get you from A to B. They have so much space a man can live in it. With shag carpeting, waterbed, and a sweet lava lamp, these mobile abodes have all the comforts of home. With quality parts and plenty of Napa know-how, you can keep the original tiny house running longer, stronger. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how!
Dang. My point is that, you know, one of the most overrated aspects of a team is depth. Depth, in most cases, is a bad thing, because if you have a whole bunch of quality talent at the 8, 9, 10 position, and you're not on a good team, then those guys are mad. Like, I could help. Put me in the game, coach, you know? And if you're on a good team, you know, you have talented players who are just not seeing the floor. Like, it's all well and good that the Toronto Raptors have Norman Powell, and eventually that'll be useful. But right now, he's just getting like 5 minutes a game because there are better players in front of him. Like, that's not all that big of a deal, right? So in the playoffs, what teams need to do, and if you don't do this, then you have Anderson Varejão, you know, screwing up in game 7 of the finals. So you are making a profound mistake if you don't shorten your rotation in the playoffs. And what I would argue, right, is that the lineups that you can make with a three guard rotation of Patrick Beverley, James Harden, and then Eric Gordon, and then your wings are going to be Decker, Trevor Ariza, and your centers are going to be Clint Capella and Ryan Anderson. Ryan Anderson, any time that, you know, I think having like 15 minutes of Ryan Anderson at the center against a team like the Clippers is just going to be just so ridiculous. Like, and that's one of the great things about this Rockets team. And part of the reason why I think the Ryan Anderson at center thing works, you can outscore a team and win. If your offense is going to be so absurd, with Ryan Anderson at center, which it would be, then that's a viable strategy. If you can outscore them, it doesn't matter that your defense is not very good on the inside. In fact, Mike D'Antoni has figured that out and played Amari Stoudemire at the center, and Amari is one of the worst defensive centers of any star center ever. I mean, he's really bad. So I think Mike D'Antoni has shown a propensity and a willingness to play really poor defensive centers, you know, who are, you know, efficient and give you this ridiculous offensive advantage because, yeah, you're going to give up, you know, 2 points on more possessions than you normally would, but you're just going to respond with a three.
And sure, but I mean, the thing in the playoffs, right? You defensively, like, and this is where I disagree with a lot of Rockets fans, because a lot of Rockets fans want to see Rhino at center. And my thing is, like, where's the rim protection going to come from? And right, and like,
it doesn't matter. That's the point.
No, but like, but here's my thing, like. Defensively, when you're trying to structure like not even a really good defense, but a functional defense, one of the key things you need to have no matter what is rim protection on the floor at all times. And that's why Draymond works so well at the center, because he can rim protect the rim. And when you put Ryan Anderson at the center, you're forcing your teammates to help a lot. And I'm not sure if that's necessarily going to show up in the net positive all the time. And
look, your defense would be bad. That's the point I'm trying to make. It would be bad, but your offense has a higher ceiling than their offense with Ryan Anderson at the center.
They would. But I mean, to how much? Like how much more?
A lot.
I mean, is it really that much better than playing Clint Capella at the center? I mean, because, and that's really the argument you have to make, right?
Well, no. I mean, you would play the majority of your center minutes with Clint Capella. I'm talking about like 10 to 15 minutes.
Then, yeah, it can work. It can work.
Definitely. I'm talking about like 10 minutes in the playoffs.
Yeah. And in that case, yeah, I would agree with you, because then you can do some really interesting things. And especially with teams as shallow as the Clippers, right? You're forcing guys to play heavy minutes when you put Rhino at the center. And so, And again, we were talking earlier about the tough decision making. I mean, like, centers aren't used to guarding. I know a lot of centers are shooting threes now, but centers in general aren't used to guarding 3-point shooters. And right. We saw this with to a smaller extent with Dwight Howard in Houston, right? If you had a 3-point shooting center, you were going to kill the Rockets, because Dwight would never close out on those guys.
Right.
And that's something like most centers deal with in the NBA. Like if you put let's just say JaVale McGee, right? If you put JaVale McGee, this is a bad example, and I'm saying it out loud. But I mean, JaVale McGee, he's not used to closing out 3-point shooters. And so most of the time, whoever's the center, if he's a 3-point shooter, he's going to get an open look 98% of the time, right? And that's really deadly.
So, and that's sort of my point. Ryan Anderson goes in the game immediately once Draymond Green is subbed. That's what I'm saying, right? Because, yeah, like, you know, you're either going to have Zaza or JaVale McGee giving up totally wide open shots, right? Mm-hmm. Or you're going to have them, you know, close out, right? And JaVale McGee is going to foul, and Zaza is going to, like, you know, be so far away from the rim that he can't impact anything defensively. And then, you know, they're basically just going to have to be like, well, now we have to put in Draymond Green again. And, you know, it's just like you can run them ragged. Like, my point is, right, is the Rockets have a very particular set of skills that make them a nightmare for people like you, right? They will find the Clippers and they will kill them. Same thing with the Spurs. I firmly believe that, you know, once the Rockets tighten up their rotations, I think the Rockets are going to make the Western Conference Finals. I think that the Rockets are better than the Clippers. I think that the Rockets are better than the Spurs. I really like what every lineup, every variation of those seven guys who I said, for the most part, I like it. Or every variation that would actually see court time. That's my point. That's why the Rockets have a higher playoff ceiling than I think you're maybe giving them credit for.
Well, sure. I mean, and the whole lineup thing you brought up is really key, because that stuff really matters in the playoff. All the micro things really matter in the playoffs. And my thing is, like, these teams, like the Clippers, like, I firmly believe that they have an extra gear that we haven't seen yet, on especially defensively. Like, I think they can be madness defensively, especially the way DeAndre Jordan's been playing lately on that end of the floor. Like, he's like earlier in the year, he was one of he was probably the leading candidate for defensive player of the year up until the Grizzlies decided to go ahead and overperform and play really, really well defensively, and Marcus Gasol decided to go crazy. But up until that point, it was DeAndre Jordan, because the Clippers were like third in defense. And in that case, like, if they're that good defensively and they're playing on a string, and that's something I always bring up a lot, playing on a string defensively, when you can make all these switches in like a snap, like, and you won't lose a step on your defender. And that's something that's like really key in the playoffs. Like, teams that can play on a string like the Warriors, there's a reason the Warriors are so damn good on that end of the floor. Because when they're playing on a string, nobody can beat them. And I don't think the Rockets have that. And I don't think they have that extra gear that teams like the Clippers, teams like the Warriors, teams like the Cavs, like, I don't think they have that. But, yeah, I agree that they're better than the Spurs. I can buy that.
That's sort of why I disagree. Like, your minutes with Ryan Anderson at the center, like, you're right, you're not going to have a good defense. What you're going to be banking on is that you hit more shots and better shots than they do. You know, you can give up a ton of points during those minutes, but you can get them back on the offensive end. I think Clint Capella can switch really well. I think that Trevor Ariza is one of the better power forwards who can switch in the league. I think that James Harden is, like, James Harden, his best job defensively is as a power forward. That's like a little known fact about James Harden, that a lot of the time he is put on power forwards because he's not particularly athletic or mobile, but he's like a brick wall. So he'll defend power forwards. Like, he can defend Zach Randolph. Like, that's a real thing, right? So you're moving him to the small forward, and now, like, his athletic limitations aren't as big of a deal against guys like, you know, John Wall or Bradley Beal. Cause he's, you know, if you force a switch, so that, you know, now all of a sudden James Harden is on, you know, Kyrie Irving, like, that's a problem. But, like, you try to avoid that. Like, you try to go over screens. You try to, like, do all of this fun stuff, right? And then you have Patrick Beverley, who I think is a pretty good point guard defender. He's my all-NBA defensive point guard right now. And then Eric Gordon, I don't think you give him enough credit. I think that's a really good switching lineup.
This is something I talked about on my podcast. Like, Eric Gordon's been really good defensively this year. Like, and I'm not talking about, like, above water. I'm talking about, like, really good. Like, to the point where he's been probably the second best wing defender on the Rockets this season.
Dude, so where's your skepticism coming from?
Just, like, that you, when you're playing Rhino and Harden at the same time, like, they're probably going to play a good amount of minutes together, right? Because your offense
not in the playoffs. No, I think that Ryan Anderson is going to play once you get into second round Western Conference Finals and Finals. I think that Ryan Anderson will play the 8 minutes a game that Capella won't be playing at center, and he will never play the power forward.
Sure, but I mean, like, he's going to end up playing, like, at least 30 minutes a game, right? Like, that's
no, that's what I'm saying. I think he'll play like 8 minutes a game.
Well, and see, that's where I disagree with you. I think he is going to be playing 30 minutes a game.
You're a dingus. I mean, in crunch time, they take him out. They always take him out. And yeah, in the playoffs, every minute is crunch time.
I mean, it's tough, right? Because, again, I haven't seen this team in the playoffs. And that's really a big part of why I'm so skeptical, is because I want to see them at the highest level. This is such a brand new team. Like, and you know, we always try to compare this Rockets team to other Rockets team. You can't, because it's totally different personnel.
I'm comparing this Rockets team to Mike D'Antoni teams.
And in that case, they're right there, right? The only thing is they don't have a second dynamic guy like Amari Stoudemire, and that matters. especially in the playoffs when teams are taking away your biggest strengths, right? And you kind of have to lean on those guys on your two superstars. That's why I don't blame Oklahoma City for how mediocre they were offensively and kind of having not the best play set late in games, because in the playoffs you have to kind of lean on those guys, and that's and I think the Rockets don't have the luxury to do that. They kind of have to rely on really great coaching and James Harden to take them home, right? And,
well, isn't that what you were just saying? I was about to say, like, what are you talking about? They have James Harden.
But I mean, like, James Harden can only take you so far, and that sounds really stupid.
Yeah, really far.
This sounds so stupid, but I mean, like, what I'm saying by that, but when you there are ways to slow James Harden down, and I'm not saying stop. But there's a way, like when you trap him in corners, like that's a legitimate way to play to stop James Harden. And teams have figured that out in the past couple of years, and that really bothers James Harden in the playoffs. Like I've seen that happen so many times where you trap him on a pick and roll, and James Harden just has to run ISOs because he can't call for that pick because they're gonna trap him and he gets stuck. And that happens a lot with Harden. Once you get into the playoffs and that's going on, I mean, who's the second guy you can lean on? And that sounds like
Eric Gordon.
Maybe. I mean, can you really depend on him at the highest level? Like, we haven't seen him play like quality minutes in the playoffs yet, right? I mean, other than that one series against the Warriors, I mean, it's just been basically Eric Gordon just hasn't played that much in the playoffs, I don't know. I'm endlessly fascinated by this Rockets team. I just want to see them. Like, if I can see them for a first round, I can give you a better answer on this. But I just think in the playoffs, teams just get smarter. And that could end up hurting the Rockets a lot.
You know that applies to the Rockets, right?
Yeah, it does. It does. But I mean, I don't know, man. I don't think we're ever going to agree on this until we see them, right? Because again, we don't know.
I tend to be right on this stuff. I'm sorry. I have a really good track record.
I mean, like, we need to. My biggest thing is, like, let's just hold on and wait, right? Because I think you're lower on the Clippers than I am. I think Doc's a really good coach. Like, I think he's probably one of the 10 best coaches in the NBA. And I think his general manager, like, the way he plays general manager kind of affects the way we view him as a coach. He's really good. He's really good, and he's really smart. I think nobody gives him enough credit nowadays, at least smart basketball Twitter. And so I think he'll figure a lot of this stuff out with the Clippers. I think he'll kind of take them to the next gear. I'm just waiting on them to, like, the Clippers kind of make me look stupid every year, but I think this is the year. I think this is the year they get to the conference finals. I think this is the year they surprise some people, because I just think defensively, the Warriors are the only team in the Western Conference that's better than them is the Warriors, right? Defensively, I don't think the Spurs can get to their level defensively. Like DeAndre Jordan's such a damn good communicator. Like, you can hear him through your TV screen, and he calls out everything, right? And like I said, he's legitimately one of the best defenders in the NBA at the center position. And I that may sound like a little bit of a hot take, but I truly believe it. When you look at how much he has to do for the Clippers, and J.J. Redick's a really smart defender, and Blake Griffin's been really good this year defensively. And we know the track record on Chris Paul's defense. And so when you have four guys in the starting lineup that are legitimately really good defenders, I mean, how can you stop that team? Because they're one of the best offensive teams in the NBA already. And so I think that lends itself to a possible conference finals appearance. I mean, I don't know. I'm really high on the Clippers. And that's pretty much my biggest skepticism with the Rockets. It's not necessarily a skepticism in the Rockets per se. It's more of an optimism in the Clippers.
Yeah. I think that the fatal flaw with the Clippers is that they have Luke and Bob Mute, which means that you can play Ryan Anderson at the center and not be punished because you can hire Ryan Anderson. So I feel like you can take DeAndre Jordan out of the game all the time because Ryan Anderson can be incompetent and cover Luke and Bob Mute. If anything, that's the strategy. Like, that's how the Cavaliers beat the Warriors last year in the finals, is they said, okay, we don't want to get beat by Draymond. We don't want to be beat by Steph. We don't want to be beat by Klay. If someone's going to beat us, it's going to be Harrison Barnes, and Harrison Barnes is a lot better than Luke Mbamute. So yeah, put Ryan Anderson on him. Like, have Ryan Anderson screw up his defensive coverage of him. Give Luke Mbamute some semi-contested shots.
Fine. I don't know, man. He's been shooting 40% from three this year. Hey, man, let's just slow down on that now. I'm kidding. But yeah.
Is he shooting 40% from three?
Yeah, he is. He is. I checked. And and that really surprised me. But I mean, yeah, and you're right. He's shooting like four attempts per game. So I mean, I think that's like four shot field goal attempts, period. So I think that's pretty, that's something we have to keep in mind. But yeah, Luke Mbamute is somebody you can hide Ryan Anderson on. And when you do that, I want to see. I want to see.
And now you can put Ryan Anderson at the center. The defense that you're giving up by putting Ryan Anderson on Luke Mbamute is nothing compared to the distinct possibility that you'll just completely take DeAndre Jordan out of the game by having five guys who can shoot, and your center just so happens to be Ryan Anderson. So, you know, there's that.
I mean, again, like, this is something like we just have to see it, and here's my point. Like how do we know like Ryan Anderson's gonna take DeAndre Jordan out of the game, right? Like
because it makes sense.
It makes sense, but again, it's a strictly in theory conversation that we're having right now, and that's really where I need to see it. I need to see it. I know that sounds like really like lame, but I just need to see it.
It is really lame. What's the point of knowing things about basketball if you don't have any predictive capacity?
I just think
like that's what coaches need to do, is like predict what the other guy's going to do. That's how you understand basketball, is predicting.
Yeah, I mean, again, I still think the Clippers are better than the Rockets, that might frustrate you.
Here's the other thing. So Blake Griffin, you know, he of course has this knee injury. He's averaging less than a dunk a game. I don't think that Blake Griffin has that extra gear that you think he does. I think that Blake Griffin is sort of in a bad place. He's got hamstring issues. He now has knee issues in both knees. He, of course, got injured in the playoffs last year, which was pretty bad. You know, I think that Patrick Beverley is going to be a good match for Chris Paul. You know, I think that, Paul, you know.
Can we talk about Patrick Beverley for a second? Because he's been so damn good. Like, and I talk about this on every podcast I go on, but I mean, like, this year, he's legitimately been really, really freaking good this year. Like, this is the best season he's having of his career. And, like, that goes to both sides of the basketball. Defensively, he's been, like as you said, like, he's first All-NBA team, and I don't think there's a case to be made otherwise. And, like, and I teased this with on the last podcast. He's going around telling people, like, I'm the best defender in the NBA. Like, I don't think that's true. But, I mean, when you're filling out your Defensive Player of the Year ballot, does he end up in the top 10? Is that a wrong conversation to be having? Because I don't think it is. Because I think he's been really clutch for them on the defensive end. Like, he has a 90 defensive rating in the fourth quarter, and that's won them a lot of games. Like,
yeah.
And like, if you've been watching them close, like, he's legitimately won the Rockets a lot of close games. If you remember that Russell Westbrook, stop. I mean, you know, that infamous stop.
He had a really great block late game on Tony Parker last night.
And he's been doing stuff like that for a long time, and like this season. And offensively, he's taken it to a different gear, like, because he's passing the ball at a higher rate than he's ever done. And I think that helps the second unit so much. The second unit's been so good since Patrick Beverley's came back. Well, and a lot of that is because the Rockets aren't playing Tyler Ennis anymore. But I mean, It's just been so much better with Patrick Beverley. I don't need to tell you the Rockets record without Patrick Beverley, because it's been said so many times. They're like 17-3 with Patrick Beverley since he came back, and that's really interesting in the playoffs, because
now you have him covering Chris Paul, which I like.
Yeah,
I like that matchup.
And now that three guard lineup that you're talking about makes a lot of sense, because offensively, like, that's a hellhole for teams to defend, because Patrick Beverley is a 40% three-point shooter, and that's been a trend for the past 2 or 3 years now. Like, he's been shooting that great, so you can legitimately call him a legitimate 40% three-point shooter. You can't leave that guy open. Same with Eric Gordon, and same with James Harden. Like, and so once you have a lineup with, like, well, you can't leave four of the guys open, and if you put Ryan Anderson at the center, that you can't leave five guys open from three, and three of those five guys can penetrate really, really well and cause a lot of mismatches. Like, can that post like a 120 offensive rating, maybe even 130? Like, that's how dangerous the Rockets can be offensively in the playoffs.
Dude, you're not making a good argument for them not being a Western Conference Finals team.
Well, and again, I can't argue against the Rockets. I my biggest thing is the Clippers. Like, I really like the Clippers, maybe it's an irrational love of them. Like, I really like what they can do in the playoffs.
They never made it past the second round.
I mean, a lot of that is because of human error, right? Like, they choked away a lot of things, a lot of series, and
I think that is misrepresenting what actually happened. I think that the Rockets responded really well and changed their game plan and started running things through Josh Smith, and they just didn't know what to do about that. There were like 15 Josh Smith to Dwight Howard lobs a game, and their defensive communication just didn't do a very good job. And then, of course, the Trailblazers series last year, or this last playoffs is a different story. But weren't they also taken out in the second round by the Spurs? Is that right?
That might have been 2 or 3 years ago. Oh yeah, it was. I think they lost to them 3 years ago. Yeah, that's correct. But that's a totally different team than what they are now. And that's
really, no. It's,
yeah, it is, man. Like Blake Griffin's a lot better than what he was 3 years ago.
No, that's not true.
I mean, he's a lot less athletic than he was, but he can do a lot more things with the basketball in his hands than he could 3 years ago. Like he's a
yeah. That's not true.
Huh? What do you mean? Like, he's a really good passer. And he's a like
he's always been a really good passer.
Yeah, but like, you're starting to see the Clippers run more things through him these past
couple years. Yeah, and he gets shut down by Draymond.
That's Draymond Green. I mean, that's the best defender in the NBA. You can't really like say that. You can say Draymond gets shut down pretty much anybody, right?
So, dude, go look at his numbers, man. They're not good. I mean, they're not good relative to the rest of his career.
This season, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Sure, but he's been better defensively to make up for a lot of that offense. And I don't know. Like, a lot of this is I just think Doc's a really good coach. And
I disagree.
And I think he'll figure a lot of this stuff out. And they're a lot deeper than they used to be. And that's a big factor in like in that Rocket series you were talking about. Like, the Clippers were dead tired. Because they played like legitimately like six guys, and so like the Rockets took it like in the fourth quarter. Like, if you remember that crazy Josh Smith fourth quarter with Corey Brewer, like where they were hitting a bunch of threes, like the Clippers couldn't defend for crap because they were so damn tired. Like, especially Blake Griffin was exhausted at that point because he was carrying the team. Like, he was legitimately one of the three best players in the playoffs like that year. And he had to do so much for the Clippers because they just didn't have a bench unit. And so now they have somewhat of a bench unit. Granted, it's not that great, but it's much better than what they've been in these prior years. And I think that makes a difference. Like, I think you can play different guys at that center position. I think you can play I think Austin Rivers is
oh my God,
like his reputation.
No, he's really, really bad.
He's a good defender.
No, he's not. No, he's really, really bad. How much do you watch him?
I watch him a fair bit because I enjoy watching him.
No, he's even worse than people. He's even worse than his reputation. I mean, like, God, Sal, what do you? Man, we gotta close out this podcast. It was a good discussion. I just happen to think that you're profoundly wrong about some certain things. But. You know, they're not things that, you know, oh, you think that Austin Rivers is a good defender? Like, you're such an idiot. Like, that, you know, that's a thing that people think. I think you're profoundly wrong, though. That's my opinion. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, sure. I mean, but like, I mean, he's done a pretty good job in defending point guards when Chris Paul sits. And I think that's really key here, right?
No.
He has. Yes. I mean,
no.
I mean, we'll just agree to disagree here.
Man. Salomon, you know, despite our difference of opinions, you know, we'll see what happens. Like, again, I don't mean to be dismissive because, like, you know, A, anything can happen. And B, they're not like ridiculous opinions. Like, I get where you're coming from.
And that Rockets Clippers matchup on December 30th is something I think we're both going to be paying a lot of attention to, particularly in regards to a lot of this stuff, right? Because I know Mike D'Antoni's not going to pull out the entire bag of tricks on them because it's just a regular season game at the end of the day. But it's gonna reveal a lot, right? Because we haven't seen this version of the Rockets go up against the Clippers yet, and so that'll tell us a lot of what we need to know. So once we see that matchup, I think we'll get a lot of our questions answered there.
Capella is still going to be out, so they're going to be pretty much forced to play Ryan Anderson at center.
Yeah, it's tough.
So. I mean, well, no, I think that's going to be really good.
Well, I mean,
pull DeAndre out of the game.
I mean, just having Clint Capella out, it's gonna be rough for a majority of the game. Like Clint Capella is like, this is something I talked about in the last podcast. Like with I think I was talking with Forrest Walker. Like Clint Capella, the Harden Capella pick and roll is like a huge part of the Rockets' offense. Like that's like their bread and butter. Like that's a lot of what makes them work. And now that they don't have that for a while, it's going to be really tough. Like I think they're going to miss a lot of shots because I think teams don't have to worry about Capella as a role man anymore. And I think it's going to be rough. Like there's nobody on the roster that can do what Clint Capella does. Montrezl Harrell can do a little bit of that, but he can't do it to the same extent that Capella did. It's going to be rough. It's going to be like it's a 19 game injury by history. It's like what I saw on Twitter. So if he's out for 19 games, like the Rockets are gonna have to wing it like badly. And I think D'Antoni's a good coach, so he'll figure all this stuff out. But it's a lot of their statistics, like offensive rating, defensive rating, all that stuff's gonna go down for the time being. They'll win games, but they'll win them in close margins. I think that's pretty much what's gonna happen for this next 20 game stretch.
After the Spurs game, the Rockets went from the second most difficult schedule thus far to the first. So they've had the most difficult schedule thus far, and they're going to have a bunch of home games coming up soon, and get a bit of a breather. I mean, like, they've been playing, again, like, the most difficult schedule in the NBA, and they've built up some nice wins. I mean, they're gonna, you know, have a little bit of slack to compensate for that. So, I guess that would be, the first point that I would make. And the second point that I would make is, I think we've seen what a pick and roll with Harden and Montrezl Harrell looks like. Of course, the finishing from Clint Capella isn't there at all, but it's a lot like, you know, like the Ty Lawson Kenneth Faried pick and roll that was really good in Denver, or the Iverson and Dikembe Mutombo pick and roll that was good back in the day. You're going to have a lot of Kobe assists. You're going to have a lot of times where James Harden's going to shoot and then Montrezl Harrell's going to get the offensive rebound. And so Montrezl Harrell is not going to finish as well as Clint Capella, but he's going to get more offensive rebounds. And James Harden has really been the guy who in the pick and roll, I mean, he's been more efficient than Clint Capella has been, which is, you know, he's actually been historically good in the pick and roll as ball handler. So yeah, I think it's not going to be as big of a deal, as it sounds like you think it's going to be. But like, you know, it's not good.
I mean, the luxury that the Rockets have is they weren't playing Clint Capella that many minutes. Like he was averaging around this month, he was averaging around 21 minutes a game or something like that. So they'll probably play center by committee, and they might play. And this kind of gives me shivers. They might play Onuaku, who was in the D League for the first bit of the season. So if the nights that Nene rests, because he rests on a lot of those back to backs, they're going to be playing. So they're going to be starting Harrell, and they're going to be playing Onuaku at backup center, and that could potentially kill them because Onuaku is not very good yet. He's still very raw, and so if he gets minutes, I mean, I don't know what the hell the Rockets are going to do to make up for that. And the big part of Harrell, like, he has like no hands. Like he has like he can't catch the things that Capella caught. And that's like a big part of all this, right? Like the lob passes that Capella was able to catch. I mean, like, few players could catch that those kind of lob passes, like, especially on this Rockets roster. Like, nobody could pretty much do what Capella could do in the lob game. And so,
well, so you remember that game two that Bismack Biyombo had against the Cavs last playoffs that he had 27 rebounds?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what was happening. Like, he would miss the initial shot and then get the rebound and put it in. So, like, there's... Yeah, I mean, like, percentage-wise, he's not going to be as effective, but you open up a new dimension, which is this offensive rebounding aspect of things. Look, it's not good, but, like, I think we've seen that the Rockets can be a little bit flexible in regards to that. So, I don't think they'll have to call up Onuwaku. They might, just in case.
And they're going to be playing Rhino at center a lot. I mean, like, that's what
they have been.
Yeah. And that's what Mike D'Antoni mentioned in the last press conference he did. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just talking about how they're going to have to, again, make up by committee. And a lot of that's going to be playing like Rhino, like 10 or 15 minutes a game at center. And we're going to be seeing that a lot. So we'll get to see that line that you've been talking about a lot. So it's going to be interesting. I really want to see how effective that lineup is. And if they're as effective as you're saying that they can be, then maybe I have to rethink the way that I think about how they match up with the Clippers. And if that's true, then maybe they are a conference finalist. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I tend to be a little bit more pessimistic on the Rockets than a lot of people in Houston do, but that's just because I'm just trying to, you know, stay above water and try to be as objective as possible.
You're wrong, though. All right, well, we'll certainly have to watch and find out, and I am confident by nature, but there's not a lot of guys out there who know more about the Houston Rockets than Salman Ali, the host of the Red Nation Hoops podcast. It's rednationhoops.com, right?
Yeah, rednationhoops.com is where you can find us. We've been writing a lot of good stuff, and you can find all our post and pregame breakdowns for every game of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. So go check them out, and make sure to check out almightyballer.com, listeners, to listen to all of our wonderful podcasts on ABPN, especially the A-Team podcasts, because they're fresh off the griddle. We've got some great ones. We've got Heat Beat, The Undebeatables, which cover the Pacers. The Glue Guys cover the Nets. The New York Knicks podcast cover the Warriors. Just kidding, they cover the Knicks. man, I'm going to delete that. I appreciate you coming on the show. Anytime we talk Rockets, we'll of course have Salman on. And, I actually really like talking to you about the Rockets. So, you know, it's been good.
Yeah, it's been good, man. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Oh, and Twitter one more time.
@RedNationHoops on Twitter.
All right, cool. Thanks for listening.